So we're gonna look at now, in this part, we're gonna look at the end of Luther's life, and definitely some of kind of the legacies that he left, and how that impacted different movements, positive and negative, going forward, and just really his impact on the church and his impact on the world. Really, there's a lot of things there. So, right. So the first thing they really got into there, which is kind of a controversial legacy of Luther, is Luther and the Jews. Okay, what he thought about Jewish people, what he wrote about Jewish people, and then how that is going to impact history down the road. So they spent a good bit of time kind of unpacking that, and I think they did a pretty good and fair job on that. So what's the issue here? Any questions or comments or additions to that? What's going on with Luther and the Jews?
He can't figure out why they don't come to Christ.
Okay, that's a big part of it. His frustration and anger really is that they have not received Christ. They have not come to Christ. I think one of the scholars said basically, okay, you people had 1,500 years. It's time. You know, the time's up, basically, is kind of the tone of it here. Yeah.
I don't know why he felt that. I mean, Christ came and didn't convert them all either.
Right, right.
It's not like this.
He had more success early on, though, in the church. But
here,
right. Yeah. Right. So I think, again, it goes back to, and I don't know if it's the same scholar, another one pointed out that he kind of felt like, you know, the gospel, of course, had been hidden largely, the message. So his idea was early on, now that it's out here, now that we're preaching the gospel, and it's pretty, surely they'll get it now, right? Okay, they didn't get it before, but it was, you know, it was veiled. But now it's out there, and we're preaching the Bible, people can read the Bible, now they'll get it. Right? But as one of the other scholars said, that was kind of a naive position because even in our own world today, do most Jewish people by ethnicity, do they follow Christ? No, only a very small number do. So we have to understand that, you know, the things that the Jewish people have been through, the persecution and the moving, all that, what holds them together is what? Starts with a T. Tradition. Right? Tradition. And so for a Jewish person to leave a lot of that behind, which leaving behind all of it's not necessary, as we've talked about before, you can still keep a lot of your customs and things like that and be a Jewish Christian, as long as it's not conflicting with the gospel. But even today, I think we've talked about this before, there's a Lutheran pastor was talking about this, and I think one of them, we looked at different religions, you know, he is Jewish and in college converted to Christianity, and his family basically disowned him because he's like, you can do basically anything you want as a Jew. You can be any kind of Jew you want, except the Christian Jew in the eyes of many Jews. You know, an atheist Jew is more welcome than a Christian Jew, right? Because this is seen as leaving all of this tradition and what makes you who you are behind. That is not unique in a lot of countries where mission work is at. Why hasn't, there's various factors, but, you know, I learned this years ago when I went to Morocco, why, you know, a massive conversion of Islamic people to Judaism, because in a country where almost everyone is Islamic, leaving Islam behind isn't akin to leaving your culture behind, okay? So this, in other groups, this comes up too, but I mean, it's especially strong in Judaism, okay? So Luther believed, again, I think fair to say naively, that there would be this mass conversion of Jewish people to Christianity, and that didn't happen. Okay, so if you look at, as I said, there are some of the earlier writings of Luther towards Jewish people, they're very kind and conciliatory. He speaks about how Christ was a Jew, and that, you know, all this, and he encourages people to be kind to their Jewish neighbors. Because he's like, well, if we want them to receive the gospel, certainly want the best. Because, again, and this point was made too, did anti-Semitism in Germany or anywhere else begin with Martin Luther? No. No. This was extremely strong in in Europe. There were all these, you know, Jewish people were seen as kind of outsiders, obviously, to the majority Christian religion. They did the jobs that Christians wouldn't do, which, you know, the old stereotype of Jewish people and money, where does that come from? Because early on, banking and finance was seen as a dirty job because of the interest and, you know, ways that people could, you know, be taken advantage of and things like that. So guess who ended up doing those jobs? Jews. It's not just because they love money, you know, it's because that was open to them because it was seen as an unrespectable profession. So many Jewish people ended up going into finance and things like that. Just like if you go to the Middle East today, all the liquor stores are owned by Christians. Okay, why? Because Islam forbids alcohol. It's a dirty job. So who owns the local liquor store? The Christian guy. Okay, if you go to the Middle East today. Okay, if there happens to be one there, depending on how strict it is. Saudi Arabia, I don't think there's probably not any in the hotels or whatever. But so that had already happened. There were stories of Jews would steal children and throw them down wells and all kinds of horrible things. So he was living in a time that was very anti-Semitic. And this point is brought up too, that this goes for just history in general. You always, I think, when you study history and you're looking at these great figures in history, you have to consider the context of the times. Okay, you have to consider the context of the times. You know, in the last several years, we've heard a lot about this. And we're, we got to take this statue down or that, or this person's bad because they believe that. Well, you know, that maybe doesn't excuse everything, but it maybe helps us understand why would they think like this? Because that was the attitude of the time. That was how, you know, how they were raised, and this is the mindset that was prominent. So you have to understand Luther was living in a time that was highly anti-Semitic, what we would say today, that was not friendly to Jewish people. So for him to write the nice things that he did was pretty revolutionary. It was pretty, that was a big olive branch. But then we see later in his life, especially with this one publication, I mean, just the title of it would make people cringe today, Of the Jews and Their Lies. That's what this little book is called. Of the Jews and Their Lies. Well, right away, so this is probably not very nice, right? This is not going to be positive towards the Jewish folks. So that he writes that, and a lot of the things, you know, the most cringeworthy things that he said are taken from that singular work of the Jews and their lies. I doubt you can even buy this in the Concordia bookstore today. It's out there. It's in, you know, you can find it on the web. It's not copyrighted, but it's not one that we really promote, to say the least. Yeah, this would be a great good one to study here in Sunday school. But all right, so all that being said, is it fair to draw a direct line from the things Luther proposed, especially in that one writing, to, say, the Holocaust in Nazi Germany? No. I mean, obviously this is a Luther thing, but I don't think any of the scholars they had on there, and they range. I mean, these are not all Missouri Synod folks. I mean, they're from all different Lutheran groups, some more liberal than others. And all of them said, no, you really can't do that. Where that comes from, and they showed the book in there, is a big, thick book. It's like this. William Shire, it's called The Rise and the Fall of the Third Reich, which is a very detailed chronicling of the rise of Nazi Germany under Hitler. I have it on my bookshelf at home. It's huge. But in that, there's one part where he basically blames the rise of Nazi Germany and the Holocaust on Luther. He says this is Luther's fault because he said all these things, you know. But again, a lot of scholars, they would not take that view, that it's not quite that neat and tidy. For one thing, common sense would tell you why not. Because how long after Luther was Hitler? 400 plus years, right? So if what Luther said triggered a Holocaust against Jewish people, what probably would have happened? It would have happened, yeah, before 400 years, right? So if it's that direct, Luther says and writes these things, and then all of a sudden, you know, Jews are being worked and gassed to death all throughout Germany, It probably would have happened a little sooner than that, don't you think? You know, why would it take that long? So that right there is a problem. Now, this idea is still out there, though. You may hear Jewish folks, some of them are aware of some of these things. So not only to become a Christian, but to become a Lutheran, you know, would be very, you know, difficult, you know, because they would come home and say, well, do you know what Luther said about the Jews? You know, when I went several years ago, I had the opportunity to do a week-long workshop up at the Holocaust Museum up in Washington, D.C. Great seminar, very fascinating. We had even speakers come in that were survivors of the Holocaust. But in one little part of the class, there was like a video we were watching, and it did this. It basically said, well, Luther wrote all these bad things about the Jews, and so I'm sitting there as a Lutheran. Do I say something about this or try to offer some nuance? But even, you know, this is just a few years ago. So that view is still out there of, you know, basically blaming Luther for much of what happened, even though you can't really draw this direct line, and you have to understand the context of the times that Luther was writing it as well. Like one of the scholars said, there was this idea of tolerance and, you know, all this. This is very modern, okay? This is very modern. It's not something that you see back even, you know, much more recently in history, okay, as a general societal value, okay, for different views and different religions and things like that. The root of this, I think, where that argument falls down, we're just going to conveniently blame Martin Luther for the Holocaust, you know, and the rise of Hitler. There's several things, but one of them is this ethnic or theological? The things, as harsh as they were, these things that Luther wrote against Jewish folks in that book, was his main rub, you would say, with the Jewish folks? Was it ethnic or was it theological?
Yeah.
Ethnic, you think?
I do, yeah.
Okay, why?
Well, because they weren't like us.
Okay.
They stuck together, they got them up, you know, it was hard, it was almost like a tribal thing.
Okay.
So maybe we use theologic to justify our ethnic dislike.
Okay. All right, well, but okay, think of the things Luther wrote earlier as well about, you know, being kind to the Jews and things like that. If it was primarily ethnic, would it really matter if these folks, what they believe, though? If it was primarily ethnic? Not really, because of who they are, they would need to be, and Luther didn't advocate killing. He advocated, again, not to try to sugarcoat it, but destroying basically their synagogues and expelling them from the country. He never said round them up and gas them or work, make them slaves or anything like that. So I'm going to say it's primarily theological, really. Because, yes, the ethnicity, but it wasn't because their bloodlines were in their DNA, which they didn't understand that were a certain makeup. It was because of that they were not Christians. Okay, basically. Okay, did you want to add to that? Or?
Well, I hear what you're saying, but the theological part is that, you know, we were persecuting everybody that didn't believe. I mean,
right.
Not Catholic.
Right. Okay.
I mean, Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing, but it starts with theology, but we twist it into ethnicity.
Yeah, and I think that's correct. It was twisted by Hitler and others later on to become an ethnic thing. But Luther's main issue, why he became frustrated, because of the lack of conversion. And that these people were blind to the truth of the gospel. So, again, you know, Luther is not, you don't read anything Luther wrote about that the Jews are inferior people because they're Jewish and ethnic origin or anything like that. It's a religious anger. And honestly, anyone who was on the other side of Luther theologically, did they get similar treatment? Yeah. They did. They got both barrels blazing. So this kind of fits with what he did in that if you were an opponent of the gospel, He's going to let you have it. Okay? Go ahead. Kent had his hand up.
Yeah. I basically agree with Luther, mm-hmm. what he said, mm-hmm. not in what he did. You know,
yeah.
His anger.
Yeah. How he said it, maybe.
Yeah.
Yes.
His anger is, yeah. is not an appropriate response. But,
right.
Because I thought about this a lot. I already have a number of Jewish friends, yes. and some Messianic Jews. But, and I think it is truly all theological, because what Luther looked at was, I'm certain of this, he looked at the writings of the Jews, the Old Testament, and all the prophecy.
Yes, that's fulfilled.
Talked about, yep. Jesus coming. And I struggle with that today, because they are the chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus focused on them. God focused, said that they're his chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
And for them not to understand what was written by man through God breathed into them, those words, I'm frustrated with it too.
Yeah, it is frustrating.
That why you folks in particular, because you could say today, and I think we touched on it before, there are a lot of people, the vast majority of people on this planet don't believe in Jesus,
right.
Christ. But the Jews had a special position. They understood Christ was a Jew himself.
Mm-hmm.
And for them not to, I'll just say, comprehend and understand,
right.
as opposed to conversion, just boggles my mind.
It is
a theological thing in my mind.
And it is frustrating. Yeah, and a vast majority of the scripture is written by Jews, right? Old and New Testament, okay? What does Ron like to say? He's giving out a Bible. So if someone says, I'm Jewish, he's like, well, here's a book written by Jews.
Right?
Okay, here, read it. Now, Jews wrote almost this whole thing. There's very little Gentile authorship, okay? Just a few books. So it is frustrating, but the scripture also talks about, you know, the blindness and the darkness people walk in until the light comes on. And you said you know a few of these folks, and a couple I've come in contact with. When there is a person who's ethnically Jewish and they become a Christian, they usually like big time get it. I mean, it's like that light has really come. So it may not be a lot of folks, but I mean, they're like, wow, okay, now this whole Old Testament, all this stuff, like we're studying Exodus, it makes sense. This is all pointing us to the Messiah, who is Jesus, right? Okay, so now when Adolf Hitler comes along in the 1920s and 30s, his argument, is it more theological or ethnic? It's definitely ethnic. Okay, even when I was at the Holocaust Museum, this is something they kept coming back to it, because people wonder, how did this happen? You know, what was the big idea behind Nazism, and why did it take root and grow? And really the answer they gave us, and I agree, is that it was race ideology. It was basically race ideology, that there is a superior, genetically superior race of people, and those people need to rule the world. And they need to make a lot of babies to do that. Hitler encouraged, you know, German women to have all these kids. And what do you need then? You need more land, you need resources. So it is acceptable for that master race to take over land and basically rape and pillage it for their benefit, because they are the master race. And whatever Jewish folks, gypsies, whoever gets in the way, they can be worked to death or eliminated. And furthermore, we don't want those inferior people to breed. Because if we want a master race, we only want genetically good people breeding with other genetically good people to further this master race. And they use the word in the video, it's called eugenics. That's what eugenics is. Eugenics is the idea where you basically take the ideas that you would use for like livestock or plants, where you're trying to make a better animal or plant, and you apply that to people. You say, well, how do we make better people? Well, let's say our goal is to make everyone good athletes. Well, only men and women who are good athletes would be allowed to have children, because then you're going to get better athletes. Or if you want fair-skinned people, then so on. So these other people, eugenics says this idea. So go. Eugenics took root in America in some quarters as well. In the early, this is like the progressive era, the early 1900s. Not all of them, but some of these progressives at that time believed in eugenics. The lady who did the most to promote birth control, Margaret Sanger, she was certainly into eugenics. Why did she want birth control? Well, because then these poor, uneducated, and different race people, they can't breed as many people. We don't want them. We don't want that to happen. So we give them birth control, then they don't have kids. We don't want those kind of people having kids. Okay? All right? So this was a scientific idea. Not all scientists, but some bought into this. You have evolution in the late 1800s, late 19th century. Darwin writes The Descent of Man, and there's these different races, and he draws these pictures, you know, which would be very politically incorrect today, this idea that there's kind of a stratus of races. Okay? So this becomes scientific. So Hitler was not like a religious person, really. He was more of he saw himself as a man of science. Okay? This is modern science. You know, we have we're going to use this eugenics. So that was really the driving force behind the rise of Nazi Germany, this idea of a master race. And why didn't he like the Jews? Because they were inferior. They were also a convenient foil to blame all of Germany's problems on, because they controlled a lot of the money, and they're in the Depression, you know, money's worthless and all that. Oh, look who has money, the Jews. Look, they're doing this to you, right? They were a convenient, you know, boogeyman for him. He had also some issues earlier in his life with Jewish folks and all this kind of stuff, so it's kind of complicated, but basically it's based on race ideology. And they talked about that a lot in that seminar. Now, if Hitler wasn't really a disciple of certainly Christ, but not even Martin Luther, why would he bring up and reprint some of Luther's writings? They showed you some of the pictures there, if you could see it. They even had like posters with the swastika behind Luther. Oh man, that's so disturbing, isn't it, to see? Why would they do stuff? And I've seen, you know, some of these things. Why would they do that? If Hitler really didn't care about the heart of the theology Luther was teaching, certainly. Why?
Well, you have to go back to Europe and Germany, particularly in the 20s and 30s, what was going on. Mm-hmm. And it was this convergence of, well, it was a perfect storm of everything that came together. And he used that as a tool to influence people, and just to, if you say a lie over and over again, pretty soon it becomes...
People believe it. And that came from Goebbels, who was the propaganda chief of Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of people have said that since, but I think he was the first one that you hit that. So you just keep lying and lying, and people believe it.
Yeah, but everything just came together. Yeah. It was not just that one thing. It was everything. The economics, the promises that he made, and mm-hmm. socialism, just made this perfect storm for it to happen.
Right. But why would he use Luther to help him do that more? Why would that be?
Well, he's German.
Okay. We've talked about this a little bit. Luther is, we think of Luther as like a religious hero, as Lutherans. In Germany, Luther is seen as kind of a George Washington figure, even somewhat to this day. I mean, he's like their guy, right? Because he helped create this identity and break them away from Rome. So he's seen not only as a theologian, he's kind of like we would view George Washington. You know, we're going to name things after him, put statues up, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, so Luther was a figure that carried weight in Germany. So if we can use Luther, who's maybe the most beloved figure in German history, to say he agrees with me, he agrees with what we're saying, that carries weight. Okay, just like if someone was trying to do something today, a politician, and they would say, well, George Washington said this, or Abraham Lincoln, I'm going to quote from Abraham Lincoln. See, that's going to, oh, okay, Abe Lincoln thought that, then maybe we should too, right? So he was able to use that as part of his propaganda, the Nazis were, because he knew Luther was favorable. And the same thing with religion. You know, Hitler, his beliefs were very unorthodox. He was actually into the occult and things like that. I mean, he was not orthodox in his Christian beliefs. Like, he was baptized as a baby as a Christian, but I mean, he really did not have Christian beliefs. I mean, and some people tried to blame the Holocaust. Look what Christians did. Well, Nazism's really not Christian, okay, at all. But so politicians, though, will use religion to advance their cause, even if they're not personally religious, right? We know that in America, right? Okay, we know that. There's plenty of examples of it. Now, Hitler took that to an extreme. Now, when they were bringing up these writings of Luther, do you think Hitler republished any of the conciliatory writings that Luther did to the Jews? Of course not. He's pulling out of context not even that whole one writing of the Jews in their lives, but certain things. He's pulling things out of context. That's what I'm saying. Look what Hitler said. Burn down the synagogue. But there's no context to that. Okay, he's making it about it's us against them. One ethnic group of people against another. It's certainly not theological. So basically, I think the bottom line is Hitler and the Nazis used Luther where they thought he was convenient to their cause. They certainly didn't look at his whole message, even of what he said about Jewish people. But they pulled things out of context that would be to their benefit to promote their position. Again, not the first time or the last time that will happen. So is it fair to say, well, Luther said some pretty mean things about Jewish folks, especially late in his life, and we need to consider that? Yeah. But to say Luther caused Nazis in the Holocaust, I mean, that's really a stretch. It's really a stretch. It's not something Luther would have supported. Okay, comment or question?
Well, I think that so many Germans would recognize Luther and put him on with a swastika. Even if they didn't read the pamphlet, you know, it's a great poster
yes.
to have. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They must be the same because they're both on this front page.
Right, and the Nazis were masters of propaganda. You know, I've got a book at home, I got it, the Holocaust Museum, it's like all propaganda posters. And they use, of course, images, as we've talked about before, because images are very powerful. Even, you know, you give most people something to read, they're not going to read it. But if they see an image of it, okay, it's going to impact them. Okay? Even post-World War II, when Eisenhower was coming in with the, you know, Allied armies, and they're discovering these death camps and the extent of them, and this is in the Holocaust Museum, too. You know why we have all that footage of the concentration camps and the dead bodies and all these horrific things? Because Eisenhower told them, film this, document it. Why? Because he said, people have to know about this, and I don't want anyone... He said, they won't believe the things we're seeing, basically. No one's going to believe this if we just write about it. We have to show it to people. This is what really happened. Okay, so those images are incredibly powerful. So that's a really good point. So, you know, long story short, we can't blame Luther for the Holocaust. But at the same time, as I said in the video, I think one of the pastors said, we will celebrate and cheer Luther on when it's appropriate, but we will also say, well, this wasn't right. Because we don't, as we said before, we don't worship Martin Luther. We don't view everything that he said and did as divine, like Muslims view about Muhammad, you know, the deeds of the prophet or whatever. We don't do that. You know, we look. So, they showed it, you might not be able to see it from where you were, but they showed like actually some of the documents up there. Modern Lutheran church bodies have issued resolutions condemning, you know, specifically these things Luther has said about the Jewish folks and running them out of the country and destroying their property and all that. And you probably could see, but one of them was the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Okay, that's a statement. I think we did this back, it was either in the late 70s and early 80s. So it was a good bit ago. But every major Lutheran church body has passed some type of resolution saying, we don't agree with this. Okay, this is not, we don't advocate this today. Again, because we understand that, but I don't think everybody always understands that. Like, okay, we're Lutherans. That doesn't mean we hang our hat on every single thing Luther said and did. Okay, and we're going to say specifically, this is wrong. This is not our approach to the Jewish people today. Can't, and then we'll move on. So,
yeah, just yes. A sidebar, if anyone's interested, Erwin Lutzer wrote a book a couple of years ago on comparison of Nazi Germany with present day activities.
Yeah.
And basically, in my interpretation, he basically condemned the church because the church stood by highly in Nazi Germany.
Yeah. There were a few brave folks like Bonhoeffer.
Yeah.
And there were others. Yeah, but there was a small, because, and this is, again, not to go down too many rabbit trails, but again, why is a state church not a good idea? It sounds like a great idea on the surface, right? But it's not a good idea because the government and the church, when they mix, it's usually the church that suffers. It's usually the truth. And since there was a state church in Germany, Well, how was Hitler able to have influence the church? Because the state controlled the church. So they made like decrees. You have to put up Nazi banners inside of the church. Okay? So you come into the house of God, there's a Nazi banner hanging there. Right? Well, how could they do that? Well, because they controlled the churches. And to our shame, as Kent said, most of the pastors and priests went along with it. Okay?
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. Again, maybe sidebar. In China today, there are registered registered with the government. And what I'm hearing is that the government is now republishing some Bibles with changes in it.
And their sermons are monitored. Okay? All right, so in the same thing, in this time, you know, what was being said from the pulpit had to be pro-Nazi. Okay? So, and you know a lot of these guys knew better. I mean, we have an educated clergy. You know, in seminary they had studied. Hey, most of these people were Jews. You know, it's like, and now we're saying they're all bad? I mean, come on, you know? So, yeah, so unfortunately most people will cave and go along with the mainstream, if you will. There were very few. There were a few, but there were very few that said, I don't care what you do to me, but we're not going to go along with this. He died right pretty close to the end of the war. Yeah. So, and he wrote some great things. And Luther wrote some good things too. He was a pastor at Moody Bible Church in Chicago for decades. I think he's retired now, but he's done a lot of, actually, he's not Lutheran, but he has an interest in Lutheran. You see that in a lot of the things that he writes. It's, you know, even he wrote this famous little book, I think it's called like 1 Minute After You Die or something, which is a good evangelistic little book, and it's law gospel. I mean, it's like, you know, it's really, without being Lutheran, pretty much right on. He speaks about the law condemning and then the gospel saving. So, all right, we have a couple minutes. Let's look at the flip side of this. The kind of the irony or interesting thing is, at almost the same time that Hitler's rising to power in Nazi Germany, who else hitches onto the ideas of Martin Luther? And this is the question in your study guide, who actually followed many of Luther's true teachings. This would be a guy named Michael King, who was a pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay? Yeah. So, and then he goes over to a theology conference in Germany, and he learns all about Martin Luther and the things he did. And he was so impressed by Martin Luther that he says, I'm going to change my name from Michael King to Martin Luther King. And he had a son named Michael King Jr., who now became Martin Luther King Jr. So a lot of people don't know that, right? So actually, that was not his original name. It was Michael. But his father was so inspired by this trip to Germany, this conference, and also he changed his name to Martin Luther King. Okay? And then, of course, his son, Martin Jr., would later become the pastor of a church in Alabama, and then later Ebenezer, like his father, and he would lead the civil rights movement in America. Okay? Again, like his namesake, we understand Martin Luther King did all kinds of wonderful things. We also understand he was a human being who had faults as well, right? But he led this great civil rights movement, which was standing up to the powers that be. Okay, so we go back to Luther was not afraid to do that. And that's really the thing I think that gripped them, is that he was, you know, this monk, this professor from a little town, yet he's standing up to the most powerful force in the world, which is teaching people things that are wrong. And they're saying that's what's happening in America with civil rights, because it was an ethnic thing. It didn't matter how smart you were or what other skills or personality traits you had. If you were black, you were seen as inferior. Okay, you could have a PhD, but you still had to drink at the black water fountain, the colored water fountain, as they call it at the time. Okay, so they're saying this is injustice. So so Martin Luther, if we're going to say, okay, well, look at the things that Hitler did, well, what about the things how he inspired the civil rights movement? Okay? Now, again, they're looking at the aspect of the protest, but also, as I said in the video, they're applying what Luther is teaching better, because how did Martin Luther King go about the civil rights movement?
Passive resistance.
Passive resistance, not nonviolent resistance. Is that what Luther advocated? Did Luther ever advocate what we Protestants need to do is get a big army with more weapons and we need to overthrow the government? No. In fact, he was very much against the peasants' revolt. So he advocated for a nonviolent approach. What about Martin Luther King? Did he ever get arrested? Yes. Okay, he was arrested, he was persecuted, people who fought him. But what was his approach to that was still nonviolent. So this idea that, like Luther, he's like, you know, do with me what you will, okay, but I'm not going to stop speaking the truth, all right, even if it costs me my life. And that was basically the same approach that the Martin Luther King took to the civil rights movement. Of course, he did ultimately pay the ultimate price as he was assassinated. So it got into that a little bit in the video as well. And not only the American civil rights movement, they mentioned different kind of freedom movements around the world have been inspired by Martin Luther in third world countries and all over the place, taking this idea and this approach that Luther took. So it certainly inspired that. And back to an earlier part of the video, there was a quote that said, Luther preached civility, order, nonviolence, not harming others who think differently. Okay, that sounds like a lot of the things that were brought forward in the civil rights movement. Because again, Martin Luther King's message was not black people are better. It was that we were all equal in the eyes of God, right? Okay? So those are all things that we looked at. And I love that, and we're almost out of time here. Again, I told you what to get through. So we basically do the Nazi Germany and civil rights link, and then we'll look at some of the other stuff next week. But the attitude of Luther, say, notwithstanding everything he ever wrote, but his overall message and his overall idea is that there is not one ethnic group or education level that's better than the others. Why? Why would Martin Luther say that? Martin Luther King would probably say, because we're all created by God. We're all created in God's image. And that's true. But Luther more specifically would say, what condition do we all share? Sinful nature. And there was a quote they gave from Luther. He said, we are all beggars. This is true. I love that quote from Luther. And the story of that is that was one of the very last things he ever wrote down on paper. And when he died, they found that written on a scrap of paper in his pocket when he died. So this is one of the last, if not the last thing he wrote. Not the last thing he said. His last thing he said was like, into my hands I commend my spirit, so help me God. Amen. And he died. Like Jesus on there, that's the last recorded thing. But he wrote this down on a scrap of paper. We are all beggars. This is true. And he put this in his pocket for some reason. You know, maybe to pull out and look at. So this was the idea that we're all sinners. We are all beggars before God. But the good news is he shows us mercy to us filthy beggars, doesn't he? Okay, but I've always loved that story about, you know, all the things he ever wrote, possibly the last thing he wrote down on paper was that we are all beggars, this is true, then they find it in his pocket after he died. Okay? All right. I want to keep going, but we're out of time. So we'll save the rest of the good stuff for next week. We'll look at Luther's death and then some of the other, you know, effects. You know, we looked at these two specific things today. That everybody knows about, the civil rights movement, Nazi Germany, but what about just kind of in a broad sense, this impact that Luther has had on the church and the world? We'll wrap that up next week. Any other last minute questions or comments?